put to the clothes that you make. When you go to the pet. Yeah, we know all these use of present. When I buy layers two. Yeah. These use of Amba, let me tell your presenter, your mama. Or whoever is presenting will take the first one. Welcome to. Or Ukon Mutos, the manipulators of Shalap. Where is National Treasure? Why are you hiding? Honorable Fixer, you won't hide for too long. welcome to everybody. Welcome to members of the media, everybody else. This is a joint sitting of the committees of appropriations, both the STEMI committee, the select committee, and also the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education. So myself, as the chair of the Standing Committee of Appropriation, will chair the meeting together with the chair of Appropriations for the Select Committee and the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education. You all have the agenda before you. We will start with a presentation by the Department of Higher Education and Training. What we have done, because the issues of funding for higher education are issues that many people have interest in. We have also invited the Council on Higher Education. We also invited BUSA, but they unfortunately couldn't make it. We needed a perspective from the private sector. We will probably have to engage with them at some other time. At about 12:40, we'll break for lunch, and after lunch, we'll engage with the issues coming from the portfolio committee, from the BRRR, to see what they are recommending. So those are the issues. I have one apology from Honorable Nkwankwa from Honorable Nzimande, Honorable Nkwankwa, and Honorable Low. There are three apologies. Others, everybody's here. Honorable Fix.
Okay, thanks. Also an apology for Honorable McNaughton.
Oh, yes, yeah. I remember he did say that he won't be here, so we note that as well. Honorable Minister, we will then invite you to take the floor for presentation. You will introduce your team, and we will take your presentation now.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Chairpersons, or Co-Chairpersons today, and Honorable Members of the Select and Portfolio Committees, and Senior Management from my Department and Treasury, and members of the media. Chairperson, I've got the Deputy Minister here with me, Umduduzi Manai, Higher Education and Training, and I have the Director General, Greg Sponde, of the Department of Higher Education and Training. Faisal Tufi is the Chief Director in the DG's office, and Dr. Diane Parker, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for university education. Chair, I'm not sure whether you got my apology that I requested to be released from cabinet till about 12, midday, in order to give time to this meeting, but I would request that around 12, I be released to go back to cabinet. And I hope by that time, we would have gone quite far in addressing quite a lot of things. The main presentation is going to be made by the DG, but I just want to make some introductory remarks to this matter. And also to express our appreciation for having this meeting and inviting us to come and address this current issue. I want to start by saying that as government, we have set ourselves ambitious targets for the higher education sector. In the National Development Plan, we have set a target of 1.6 million enrollments for 2030 for both public and private universities and the production of more than 5,000 doctoral graduates per annum. The NDP also sets the target that all students who qualify for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme should be provided with full cost of study funding through loans and bursaries. Now, full cost of study means tuition, accommodation, food, and books. This is a reflection of government's commitment to ensure broad access to higher education, that is, university education to those who are academically deserving and financially needy. I also need to point out that part of this commitment also includes assistive aid for students with disabilities. On the 15th of October, the student protest began at Queen's University over a fee increase of 10.5%. That by Wednesday, 21st of October, 2015, this protest had spread to other institutions, including UCT, Rhodes University, University of Fort Hare, Stellenbosch, University of Pretoria, Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University, the University of the Western Cape, and the Cape Peninsula University of Technology. The protest spread to other campuses across the country with reports suggesting that most universities had joined in the protest by the 23rd of October. A number of issues have fueled the protest on university campuses. The immediate one being the proposed 2016 increments in student fees. However, two specific and more systemic issues underpin this. The first one is underfunding of the university system in general. Secondly, is the demand for free higher education for the working class and the poor. The general demand by protesting students was for a no-fee increase across the system. I still have difficulties about this idea of 0% increase. It sounds like a contradiction to me. So maybe it's better that we call it a no-fee increase, because you can't have a 0% increase. The cost of agreeing to no-fee increase will amount to 2.330 billion rands. The initial meeting, which was held between the president with universities, with representatives from the Universities South Africa, representing the vice chancellors, and representatives from the University Council Chairs Forum, which was held on the 6th of October, resulted in the establishment of a task team within the context of a highly charged climate, which, by the way, we discussed this matter at that meeting even before the protest started. And in anticipation that something more needs to be done. So a task team was established out of this meeting to mitigate possible student protests at the start of the 2016 academic year and report back on possible solutions to the immediate funding challenges of students. We were caught by surprise that at the extent of the protest in October, we had started with this meeting with the president looking at the beginning of 2016. And the task team would need to develop a short-term plan which should and report back to the president by the end of this month, end of November, on what we identified as usually the issues that normally cause problems at the beginning of each academic year. First one is the NSFAS funding shortfall that the task team will have to look into. Secondly is payment of registration fees for successful returning students who meet the NSFAS means test but were not awarded NSFAS loans. Now, I do need to explain this a little bit because students who have been given NSFAS loans are not expected to pay upfront registration fees. This has been happening now for a number of years, maybe around 2010, 2011, because we asked NSFAS to make upfront payment to universities so that NSFAS students do not have to pay upfront the registration fees. The trouble is normally with students who qualify for NSFAS but are unable to access it because there aren't adequate funds. And also the task team will have to look steadily at returning students who meet the NSFAS means test but have historic outstanding university fees. Again, I need to just explain here very briefly that because there's this top license of NSFAS that normally happens, for example, we give Fort Hare money for 1,000 NSFAS students, but Fort Hare takes 1,300 NSFAS qualifying students, not entirely out of their own fault, but because of the pressure for access to universities. Now, which means, therefore, what they've got to do is to top-slice the amount. An amount meant for 1,000 students must then cater for 1,300 students, which means, therefore, it's no longer full cost of study. So the students, there's a portion that they owe on their own to universities. And when they return, the trouble is that then the universities would often say, we can't take you even if you have passed because you're owing us some money from the previous year. That's what the presidential task team would also look into. How do we mitigate that? Now, the president called a meeting, as you possibly are all aware, of all student and university leaders, as well as some members of cabinet and senior government officials, on Friday, the 23rd of October, 2015. That meeting agreed to some short-term solutions and the process for dealing with longer-term issues. This now after the establishment of the presidential task team that I was talking about. That meeting on the 23rd of October agreed, the chairperson and honorable members, that there would be no fee increment for 2016, and that the cost of this would be shared between government and universities themselves. And also another agreement was that each university would work to ensure that charges are dropped against students detained or arrested during the protest. Of course, we were not talking here about serious offenses, because serious offenses must be matters for the courts. And that also students will resume their academic program and universities enable this by to enable this by changing their timetable to create space for students to catch up and effectively complete their exams this year. And also part of the agreement in that meeting of the 23rd was that a process will be taken forward by the task team that I was talking about, which was established earlier, to deal with other issues, and especially the issues of free higher education. I must also say, Chair, at this point in time, that we have had a very, very successful higher education summit, which I had convened, which was held on the 15th to the 17th of October. A summit was decided upon towards the end of last year. And we have already presented to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training the resolutions of that summit and the processes that were mapped out of that, which will also help in addressing the many issues that we are facing now. The underlying causes of the increase in university fees, as I have said, is underfunding of universities by the state, together with higher education inflation, which is often higher than your normal inflation. Although, I must say that on this matter, we had agreed in February with the vice-chancellors, a meeting I had convened with the vice-chancellors, to discuss this issue of fees, by the way, that we need to look very closely at the cost drivers in higher education in South Africa, because they were insisting that you can't look at fees alone outside the context of the cost drivers in higher education, as well as university funding by the state in the main. Now, the ministerial report on university funding, which was led by the now Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, he wasn't at the time, to look at the funding formula for universities, it highlighted the fact that the higher education sector was underfunded by the state, and that the cost of maintaining an effective quality higher education system were being progressively shifted towards increased student fees. I must say that I'm actually struck as we're engaging in this matter that student fees are standing now at 22 billion rands, which is equal to the block grant that we give to universities. Now, that's a very serious matter because it means we have a system that is hugely dependent on student fees. By block grant, by the way, so that we all have a common understanding in our own language in the department and with the universities, is the money that we give to universities to use as they see fit. It would exclude what we call earmarked grants. Earmarked grants, for instance, would be a grant meant for students with disabilities. It can only be used for that. Or NSFAS. NSFAS is some kind of earmarked grant because they can't use it for anything else other than for loans and bursaries. So block grant exclude earmarked grants and NSFAS. This report, the Ramaphosa report, for purposes of clarifying what we're talking about, indicated that government could not cap fee increases or set fees for the system unless it could provide adequate levels of funding effectively to support the sustainability and growth of a quality higher education system. While the block grant that I've been talking about has increased in real terms by 30%, over the last 10 years, the growth in enrollments in the system has meant that the full-time equivalent subsidy per student has decreased in real terms by 1.3% per full-time equivalent students. I've made this point elsewhere that as government we are in fact, and I would repeat that, the victims of our own success. We grew the system faster, quite impressively in many ways, but the funds didn't match up, including funds for infrastructure. But Chairperson and Honourable Members, it is important to recognize that this focus on higher education marks the underfunding in the other parts of the post-school system. I want to make this point quite strongly. Yes, students were raising, university students were raising legitimate concerns. I'm moving towards ending now. We are sympathetic, we understand that. But I want to beg that we must avoid colleges becoming a casualty in this debate. I'm worried that now everybody is talking universities. We forget one thing, that we have 1 million university students, but we've got more than 3 million students who are sitting at home doing nothing. We've finished school. And we also have a smaller college sector than the vocational college sector, than the university sector. Our TVET colleges are 700,000. Our universities are 1 million. In terms of our own white paper, we should be having 3 college, TVET college students per 1 university student. What it means, therefore, Chair, is that as we look for money, let's not only look for money. Whatever we get can't just be taken to one subsector of the post-school education and training system. It cannot be. If we do not have enough money, we must still spread it in the system. In any case, workplaces normally that would require engineers. I can't remember the exact figures now. But for every 1 professional engineer, you possibly need 3 engineering technicians and possibly 7 assistants. Otherwise, a professional engineer on his or her own is useless. So is the case, by the way, in many other sectors, you can count health and all that. And that we have a huge, huge, huge... We are sitting with a situation where we have high youth unemployment simultaneously with skills shortages. So it's important, I mustn't be misread here, that I'm trying to say university students' issues are not legitimate. But we have a choice as a country to say our point of departure must not be universities, our point of departure must be a post-school education and training system. So the resources that we have must take this into account. I look forward then to constructive engagement with you after the presentation by the Director General. Thank you very much for your indulgence, Chairpersons and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Minister. We can get the presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair, Co-Chair, Minister, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, my colleagues from the Department and the media. The presentation we are about today is taking place against the background of previous engagements we had with this committee. On the 1st of November 2013, 21st of October 2014, as well as on the 26th of May 2015. And in all these instances, the question of underfunding and shortfall in NSFAS, we have actually raised it quite sharply. This is also the case with respect to the engagement to the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training, government processes, including bidding for more money from the national fiscus with a view of addressing this question of underfunding and the shortfall of NSFAS in the system as a whole. The presentation overview would look at the post-school education and training as a whole, on the funding of university education, technical and vocational education and training, community education and training, colleges, as well as the Department of Higher Education and Training. The white paper for post-school education and training set a target of 1.6 million students in universities, 2.5 million in TVET colleges, and 1 million in community education and training colleges by 2030, as the minister has outlined. The number of grade 12 learners estimated academically to gain entrance into universities will increase from 172,000 in 2013 to about 250,000 by 2019. That is increasing pressure on universities to expand, and this constitutes approximately 30% of NSC, that is National Senior Certificate students, each year. The remaining school leaving students, which are about 70%, must be catered for through other public post-school opportunities, that is TVET colleges, CET colleges, skills development opportunities as well. The system currently caters for approximately 1 million university students, 720,000 TVET colleges, college students, and 330,000 CET college students, out of a potential of about 18 million, according to the studies that are showing at the present moment. But we're still looking at that in order to get into the determination of the current figure, that the area of adult education and training in respect to the skills needs in the country, the number of people who really desire to get and access that system is about 18 million. Now, the areas that we'll be covering in respect to universities is higher education policy context, university funding implications for 2015, no fee increase in 2016, outstanding network shortfall for 2013-14 and 2015 academic years, the underfunding of NSFAS and implications for supporting all students qualifying in terms of NSFAS means test, as the Act and regulation currently stand, underfunding of the university sector in general, that is funding implications to ensure affordable higher education by the citizens of the country. You recall, honorable members, that our constitution asserts that everyone has the right to basic education, including adult basic education and to further education, which the state, through reasonable measures, must make progressively available and accessible for all. The Freedom Charter asserts that education shall be free, compulsory, and universal for all children. Higher education and technical training shall be open by means of allowances and scholarships awarded on the basis of merit. The NPP set a target of 1.6 million by 2030 in university. That is, all qualifying NSFAS students should receive full cost of study through loans and bursaries, those who meet the threshold. Students who do not qualify should have access to bank loans backed by state authorities. This is the category we refer to as a missing middle, or the gap market in other terms by other people. 1997 White Paper 3 laid the basis for the current distribution of funds according to a cost-sharing model, recognizing higher education as both a public and private good. The 2013 White Paper for Post-School Education and Training makes a commitment to progressively introduce free education for the poor in South Africa as resources become available. The implications of the no fee increase for universities. Based on actual figures from universities, the shortfall in 2016 due to the no fee increase is 2.330 billion. If you break it down, tuition fee increment of 1.915 billion, residence fee increment of about 415 million rand. After consultation with all parties, it was agreed that the shortfall for 2016 will be shared between universities and government. And universities will contribute about 394.7 million, whilst the department, in consultation with the National Treasury, will secure the remaining 1.935 billion. The longer-term implications of the no-fee increase in 2016. The baseline for university funding must be increased by a minimum of 2.4 billion in 2017 in order to offset the 0% increase in 2016 and maintain the current student population and programs offered by institutions. Because this amount of money, it's not a one-off injection into the system. It is a recurring amount of money which has to be invested, including in the subsequent years beyond 2016. To ensure that fees do not increase at a rate higher than inflation in the future, the baseline subsidy funding each year will have to increase in line with higher education inflation, which is about 9.8% per annum, which hasn't been the case thus far. If funding for the baseline does not materialize, then growth of the system must be reduced, because you can't have both. One has to give the way. And I think that is a consideration that we need to make as a country and take an appropriate decision in regard to it. And it would have, of course, dire consequences, particularly given the growing number of youth from basic education able to meet university entrance requirements. This slide is actually showing the student, the number of students who are qualified but underfunding as a result of the shortage of funds. In November 2014, the minister met with vice chancellors in the country to discuss this matter. And the arrangement in that meeting was that going into the new year, that is 2015, the students who carry debt as a result of underfunding, who are qualifying for NSFAS, should not be offloaded from the system. They should be carried over into the subsequent years, whilst we are engaging, all of us, into getting more money to address that shortfall. That's why if you look generally at the beginning of 2015, there wasn't many disruptions in the system as it would normally happen. It's informed by that kind of engagement and that undertaking that the institution honored with the meeting with the minister. The shortfall between the number of students that NSFAS was able to support in 2013-2014, those are the audited figures and preliminary figures for the 2015 academic year. That's what is showing in there. So 2013 is 46,050, 2014 is 53,987, and currently the figure because it's not audited as yet. It's around 38,984. The total shortfall amounts to approximately 4.4 billion. So the presidential task team is considering this shortfall and other aspects linked to the start of the 2016 academic year. But I think it has to be noted that 2015 figures are not final and may not be significant undercount. Yeah, there may be a significant undercount, rather. My apologies. Now, the underfunding of NSFAS in respect to MDP figures were spoken about for full cost of study. Now, that is despite significant increases in NSFAS allocation from government from 1.7 billion in the 2009 academic year to 6.6 billion in 2016-17 financial year. Available appropriate funds are insufficient to support all qualifying students at full cost of study. If the NDP targets are to be met, significant additional funding is required. So in this slide, what we're trying to demonstrate is that the increases outstrip the increase in funding being made available for NASFA. So that is the pattern it is showing in respect to the amount of money that I injected per financial year, and down there it's just indicating the impact in terms of percentage terms. So for instance, increases of 4.6% for 2015-16 and 5.3% 2016-17 to the NSFAS vote compared with an average fee increase of 9.8% per annum in the last 3 years and growing student numbers, enrollment projected to at 1.8% per annum means fewer students as well as lower proportions of undergraduates can be supported through NSFAS in order to maintain the status quo. The following resolution in 2009 set the political expectations that students from poor and working class families should enjoy free higher education, and this was reaffirmed by the NDP. This poses a significant risk to the higher education sector and the possibility for further disruption or violence could be high. Institutions are vulnerable and their sustainability is at risk as a result of underfunding, as indicated previously. So in this slide, what we are showing is that the number of students being funded has decreased year on year because funding is not matching the enrollment increase. As a result, per capita expenditure per student is going down on a yearly basis. Now, what then would it mean for adequate funding for the poor? The table below shows what is required to fully fund 25.5% of the undergraduate population. 25.5% is the estimate of the number of students that require financial assistance in terms of the report that the minister has referred to earlier on. So calculations based on that figure are showing that what is needed in the MTEF for injection to cater for the shortfall in NSFAS is around 37 billion, which, having broken down for 2016-17, is 10.7 billion, 2017-18, 12.261 billion, 2018-19, 14.019 billion. That is the breakdown in order to cater for the full cost of that. So the NSFAF threshold is currently at 122,000 family income per annum, and it is currently under review. And if that review puts it higher, it means more money in addition to this 37 billion of MTF would actually be required. Now, the underfunding, as it continues, currently the state provides, on average, 40% of university budget, which is down from 70% 15 years ago. In 2014, South Africa spent 0.72% of the GDP on direct subsidies to higher education, including NSFAS. If NSFAS grant is excluded, the figure reduces to 0.62% of GDP. This is significantly lower when compared to 2011 figures of African countries, which was at 0.78%, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development countries, that is OECD, is at 1.21%, and the rest of the world at 0.84%. In 2011, South Africa's estimated higher education expenditure as a percentage of education, including NSFAS, was approximately 12%, significantly lower when compared to Africa, which is at 20%, OECD countries at 23.4%, and for the rest of the world at 19.8% in 2006. This is the real situation and the picture of what the system or the sector is confronted with, that we have to engage and come up with workable resolutions, which in the main is requiring huge injection of funds in the system. Growth in enrollments has increased at a much higher rate than available funding increases, which has resulted in the full-time equivalent subsidy per student decreasing in real terms by 1.3%, as the minister indicated. The decrease in subsidy funding, together with increasing pressure to enroll more students into higher education, means that the burden of ensuring that universities are able to function effectively, provide service which is required, and maintain the quality of education is increasingly displaced towards student fees, especially for undergraduate study, where third stream income, that is the income other than university subsidies and student fees, is limited. Now, here on this slide, what we are showing here, the first column, the block grant, you can see it's increasing in terms of funding, which is made available from the national fiscal. But the dilemma is that it's not increasing at the same pace as the enrollment is increasing. And the net impact of that in terms of the full cost of education is actually decreasing. So that is the issue we're trying to demonstrate here, of which if no additional funding is obtained, one has to give the way. You can't have both and still maintain the same measure of provision of quality education and training in the system. Appropriate funding of the university sector to ensure that this happens
higher education sector in terms of international comparable benchmark funding level. An additional 19.7 billion per annum is required in the baseline for university subsidies, excluding NSFA. That is 37 billion rand for NSFA plus 19.7 billion for subsidies in funding higher education in the country, which is required from the baseline. With an annual increment for inflation and enrollment growth to meet the National Development Plan target. That's what is required. However, this will not be sufficient to meet the needs of the entire post-school education and training sector more broadly. The pressure on TVET colleges, community education and training colleges to grow and provide free education for the poor is even greater than on the university sector. High-level political decisions need to be made regarding the investment in the post-school education and training sector generally. This investment is an investment in the youth and the country's future. It's money that counts. We understand the situation. We sympathize with the challenges that are therein. But to be able to address these challenges, it's money which is needed. Now, the PSEP sector needs to provide appropriate education and training opportunities for all South African citizens who are not in school. The Constitution emphasizes that technical training, like university education, should be made progressively available and accessible as well. TVET sector needs to expand significantly to provide this opportunity. In addition, the CET sector, which incorporates adult education and training, also needs to be significantly expanded and strengthened. Both the TVET and CET sectors must not be ignored. These sectors are also significantly underfunded and must service even greater numbers of youth and adults than universities. Now, if you look at this four in terms of the TVET sector, achieving TVET and enrollment in line with the white paper and NDP as well as annual performance targets without the required government funding, it will not be realized. The white paper and annual performance plan targets are 2.5 million TVET students by 2030 and visage system expansion of 14% per annum until 2019-20 financial year, followed then by a reduced expansion at a more stable rate of about 6.6% until 2030. You first start, increase the numbers, and at a certain level stage, you begin to stabilize and reduce the increase. Headcount enrollment for 2018 it's supposed to be 1.084 million. These are ministerial approved programs, of which then 985,000 is a component of ministerial approved programs. At TVET colleges, what is happening? There are programs that are approved by the minister, which is NCV, native courses. But also, there are occupational programs, which in the main would be funded through a sector education and training authorities, injection and design programs. they are offered in our colleges. So both of them are varying. That's what we mean by ministerial programs vis-a-vis occupational programs. Occupational programs are funded through CETA. Ministerial programs are funded through baseline funding from the national fiscal. Now, if you look at the last bullet there, the current 2015 baseline shortfall in the TVET sector is 7.2 billion. And over MTF, it's about 30.8 billion rand. That is TVET. Just a quick update on the community education and training sector. Interim funding norms and standards have been developed to deal with the transition of provincial adult learning centers to community education and training colleges, which is a new institutional type in terms of the CET Act of 2006. The interim funding norms were approved by the minister on 4th August 2015 and concurrence was received from the Minister of Finance on 26th October 2015 and is in process of being published in the Government Gazette. The funding norms are an interim measure until comprehensive funding frameworks are developed by the ministerial committee that will ensure a more equitable distribution of funding to the CET colleges. The main purpose of the ministerial committee is to develop the CET colleges funding framework and review TVET colleges funding norms, and this will be completed during 2016. I would ask the CFO to take us through of some of the budget pressures that are facing the department as they are normally raised by the AG year on year.
Thank you, DG Chairperson, honorable members, and Tien's Tradition, CFO for the department. The last few slides, there are not many. In some cases, summarize some of the information that was already provided by the DG and the Minister. And just a few additional areas to be highlighted in terms of ensuring that the department is also fully operational to deal with all its institutions. I think that's a very critical impact for us, as we have approximately 102 institutions and entities to manage, which is the highest number within government, but we do not have sufficient funding to do so. In the first case, just to indicate that we do acknowledge the fiscal constraints that government has, there are obviously in that itself a number of challenges, but for the department itself also an impact on service delivery. This has been raised on numerous occasions since the establishment of the department since 1 April 2010 by the Auditor General, where they also indicated that the department is not possible to actually fully impact on its service delivery as it is required. The last two bullets there is just to indicate that in addition to the treasury cost containment measures, the department did implement additional measures to ensure that we are fully functional, to ensure that key service delivery targets are met. However, by doing that, we unnecessarily had to cut down on other critical services to ensure that everything is taking place. We are also looking at ways of being more effective, and hopefully that will also assist us to be more affordable within our operations. If we look at the current budget constraints, it might be difficult for the department to attain the growth requirements as indicated previously, especially within the full post-school education system. In terms of enrollments, talk infrastructure development, which will include student accommodation, we talk increased operational costs and student support services. And when we talk about that, we talk higher education in terms of the university sector as well as the TVET sector, and most possibly also in the CETs later on. A key shortfall in my NSFAS, that was stressed very specifically by the Minister and the DG, and there are limitations placed on departmental operations. Now this is obviously, if one looks at the current capping of compensation of employees, it is not possible for the department to roll out its full staff establishment. We currently run at approximately 10% of unfunded vacancies, which we cannot fill because we do not have the money to do that. We also have to implement regional presence because of the function shift of the TVET sector and the adult education and training sector to the department since 1 April 2015, and also IT connectivity to all of those new staff members to be connected to the department. And all those are certainly very difficult to do. If we look at the next slide, we just indicate that the issue around 102 entities and institutions and the inability of the department to actually properly monitor and evaluate the areas within those institutions. We have proved that where we've invested small amounts of money to improve monitoring and evaluation. For example, in one of the earmarked grants that we have, where we appointed 2-3 additional staff members specifically to deal with that. In one aspect, we saved more than 20 million rands worth of cost that we could then relocate to another institution. Unfortunately, the department also relies currently a lot on the NSF for project support. For example, if we look at the National Autism Moderation Body, it's been funded through the NSF since its establishment in 2012, and we are still awaiting fiscal allocations to be made available to the department to continue the funding of the National Autism Moderation Body. There's also a huge pressure on examination services. If you look at the increase in enrollments that's taking place in the TVET sector, we certainly have a direct influence then on the amounts and services required by examination services. There's also some activities that's already, which is critical, that already had to be downscaled, in some cases even eliminated, to ensure that examination services functions within their budget. The increase in enrollments has a serious impact on the examinations, not only in terms of additional exam papers, but it links to the examinators, it links to moderators. So these huge costs applicable to examination services. Just the last aspect within the funding for the department and its operations is the Higher Education AIDS project, which is extremely critical, and we start to roll out to the TVET sector as well, as there's no AIDS dedicated funding within the TVET sector. Now this program has been very successful. It's run by Higher Education ESA, and the program has been very successful within the universities. We will now, through the National Skills Fund, again support this program to roll out the program in TVET colleges over the next 3 years, but that is also an area where we believe that we would need additional financial support. So just to close, Chairperson, for all the sectors, universities, NSFAS, TVET, CETs, and the full operations of the department seriously needs additional resources to be able to perform all these services. Thank you very much. Thanks, DG Minister.
Okay, that's the presentation from the department. I want to take last presentation quickly, so we have one discussion. Council for Higher Education, who's presenting? Yes. Are you connected?
But I'm not.
Can they connect you quickly? introduce yourself and then present.
Thank you very much, co-chairs and minister. Greetings. Greetings to honorable members and chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training as well. We have been invited to present our views on how to deal with the funding implications of no fee increases. And we've canvassed views among the Council on Higher Education and within the CHE itself. And share our collective perspective on this. Our starting point, Chairperson, is that we have a tension between the imperative to minimize the burden on the poor, at the same time to increase financial aid, and then also to increase funding for the university. And we have to do this in a climate... And we have to do that while maintaining fiscal prudence. And that is what we are trying to address in this particular presentation. And we also believe that no fee increases for 2016 may resolve the immediate problem, but it does not help us deal with the conditions that have actually triggered the student protest. And we believe that the conditions will prevail into the next financial year and also for years to come due to the legacy effects and ongoing inequality in our society. Now, we start with some key premises, Chairperson. Firstly, we do not believe that free higher education is a long-term solution. I think that the Minister has alluded to this. We believe that those who can afford should pay. And that is one way of minimizing the burden on the system. Because central to the dilemma which confronts us, as I've alluded to in the introduction, is that we want to increase access while we want to achieve greater success in the system, that we want to improve quality and at the same time also advance growth and expansion in the system, and that we also want to increase fees, to reduce fees while costs burgeon exponentially, and we've seen various illustrations of this in the studies that have been done. We have heard from the DG of Higher Education and Training that we shouldn't, because of our preoccupation with higher education, we shouldn't neglect the rest of the post-school education and training sector, because we don't believe that there's any principled basis, really, for funding universities above other competing priorities in the PSET sector, and these include vocational education, the colleges, and adult education in particular. So we urge then that the developmental goals, not only for higher education or universities, but for the post-school education and training sector, need to be tempered by fiscal prudence all around. We illustrate here what the patterns are for tuition costs as compared to full cost of study at universities. And you'll notice that the increases are not attributable only to increases in tuition fees. That costs of education, higher education, have increased quite exponentially in the five-year period under review from 2008 to 2013. and that the increase is actually attributable to other costs which have escalated exponentially, and these are student facilities and services, accommodation, meals and books amongst others. We believe that the prognosis for the next decade is not very positive, that material conditions for the next decade are generally going to put more strain and pressure on individuals, and it's going to put more strain on the universities as well as the citizens. We expect that there will be slow economic growth, and what this will translate into is static or decreased resources available for government funding. We also expect that there may be even shortfalls in grants to universities, which are a real possibility should the bleak economic outlook continue. And at the same time, at the university level and generally perhaps in the peak debt sector, that we'll have a mounting infrastructural backlog, and this will add new pressures on the fiscus in coming years. For us, the net effect will be that our developmental challenges will remain. Our PSET goals, which are ambitious and expansionary, will mean that there'll be a need for ongoing investment in expansion of the sector, while increased numbers of poor students will require funding support. And this is not only at the university level. The question then is, what do we do? We believe that there are practical interventions that can be done at the state level. And for a start, we may look at reprioritizing state resourcing for universities by trying to appropriate more resources, and the ministers illuminated what the quantum of this will be, as well as the DG, the implications for NSFAS and the implications for the higher education sector in general. We can look at, on the short term, departments that have underspent budgets and liberate funds to meet the funding shortfall for the short term. We can perhaps re-examine FIFA funds, and a proportion of surpluses can be earmarked to meet this shortfall. We can give attention to NSFAS loan and debt recovery, but these, we believe, will be quite modest gains should we make them optimally. And we can also improve efficiency, fiscal prudence, and eliminate wastage and losses. And we can also consider, on the medium to long term, a graduate tax so that this improves the income streams for university education in particular. We believe that there are also institutional level interventions which can be mobilized to minimize the impact of no fee increases. And these will include universities cutting costs related to functions, catering, travel, and to align these with national treasury directives so that significant savings can be derived from this. We also believe that universities, especially at the regional level, can look at sharing infrastructure, services, and resources where these are practical so that they can manage costs. We also need to bring under sharper scrutiny the administration at universities and perhaps streamline these where they are possible to make savings, and then to cap executive pay and bonuses. Another practical intervention is to improve internal efficiencies, to eliminate wastage and losses where these occur, and to look more closely at infrastructural projects and their essentialness and necessity. We are also concerned that the funds available to universities are not the same. They are not the same in terms of the balance sheet strength, and for that reason we believe that on the short term, to deal with the implications of no fee increases, that institutions which are in a better position to absorb a proportion of the costs should do so. Chairperson, I move to some conclusions. Firstly, I think that the imperative to bring university funding in line with requirements for long-term sustainability is clear, and it has been illuminated in the previous presentation. We also believe that as a principle, that those students who can afford must pay. The consequences of having free education for all is going to be that those who can afford to pay will not be contributing to the cost of university education. We don't believe that that is a viable way to go forward. We also believe that we need to tie expansion rates, much as we have ambitious growth targets for university education, for the TVET sector, as well as the college sector. But if we achieve that growth through a dilution of resources available to these institutions, we are very concerned that it will have an impact in terms of the quality of education, ultimately benefiting neither the universities, nor the graduates, nor our society. So we ought to get that balance right and ensure that expansion does not happen at the expense of quality. And finally, on this slide, Chairperson, we propose austerity measures at universities which are aimed at the optimal use of resources and to promote efficiency. We believe that universities can reprioritize their budgetary allocations, but they must do so without sacrificing the core, their core business imperatives, which are research, teaching, and community engagement. And they should look at where the resources might be going that might be outside of the core business. So, for example, if a university is investing tremendous resources into going up the ranks in international ranking, international rankings in terms of quality, that might be one way in which they might reprioritize their use of resources. We also believe that partnerships can increase collaboration between stakeholders, where there's a greater emphasis on sharing of resources and facilities and achieving economies of scale, maybe a way in which funds can be saved. But finally, we believe that there should be greater transparency and accountability over the funds which are allocated for higher education from the public purse. We've heard that this amounts to about 22 billion rand. We need to be clear that this is adding value, that it is helping us achieve the goals for post-secondary education and training, and that we are optimizing the impact of those resources. Chairperson, those are our views which we shared, and we are happy to do so with the portfolio committee. We thank you.
Thank you very much, Prof. And the minister and the team. What we're going to do now, we have agreed with my co-chair that to allow for proper engagement, we'll take five names at a time. Then they will respond and then we continue like that so that we don't have a long list of people speaking. So five at a time. The team responds, we take another five, they respond, but at 12 we'll release the minister to go back to cabinet. My co-chair is going to chair this session, so don't look at me when you raise your hand, look at him. He's going to be the one who decides who speaks first.
Thanks very much, co-chair. And rightly, I think, let's start from the first hand. I'll say numbers. One, two, three, Okay, let me rather recognize the subjects.
We know
the hand.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. And I thank the department for making their case very clear. The case before us as Parliament is to find the money. I think the department have made it very clear to us that they need resources in order to deal with the present crisis. And our duty as Parliament is to find the money, no excuses. You know, in 2013, I was surprised when Waters and Azuma said industrialization cannot be considered a luxury, but a necessity for development. And I think as this country, we need to emphasize on increasing our economic growth by engaging in industrialization. And what does that mean to us? It means we must skill our youth. There's no way we can hope to develop economically as a country without skilling our youth. And that means we must support this department. Honorable Minister, I think you must change the name of your department. And you must call it the Department of Post-School and Further Education and Training, so that we understand that you are dealing with education and development in its totality. Because that is the only way that we are going to develop this country. But otherwise, Parliament must find the money. And I think we have got the ability to do that. We must just support the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy is ready to work, and we must give them the financial support. There's no way out.
Thanks, Honorable Shope Sitole. Okay, second hand. Cognizant.
Hello.
Yes.
thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to the department for their presentation, and I'm very pleased to see that the arguments that the DA has been putting forward over the past 2 weeks are now fully accepted and motivated for by the department. And I very much welcome the fact that at last there is a recognition by the minister and everybody else of a crisis that has enormous structural debt, which is a change from the more reactive approach that we've had, which has resulted in little task groups being set up here, there, and everywhere. In my view, the entire funding model of universities needs to be changed. It has failed. It needs to be addressed substantively. The areas of damage to the system are multiple: student debt, lack of black staff, a fall in quality, a failure to be able to grow as desired, and a deep and persistent student anger and long-term resentment of the society and the system, as well as its effects on economic growth and social stability. And it seems to me this department has been left by the rest of government, whoever that might be, to its own devices, and it has been neglected by Treasury. Now, I just want to talk about a very specific issue today, though, because this is the Appropriations Committee, which is here addressing the question of the appropriations adjustment. And one of the things that I didn't see in any of the presentations was what are the cost implications in the short term in the 2015 financial year of the no fee increase. Because universities will arrive on the 1st of January, they will have to start paying their salaries, their electricity bills, and they have been relying on those fee increases in order to help them pay these bills. We estimate to the tune of about $700 million will be needed on the 1st of January to take them through until the 1st of April when their subsidies come through. Now, normally universities struggle to cope with this period and depend on fees for their cash flow because they just don't have the cash to see them through. So I'd like to ask whether the department has considered the shortfall for the first 4 months of 2015 2016, which will still be in this financial year, whether the Appropriations Committee is prepared to consider finding ways of releasing these $700 million, which might only be $500 million if we accept the department's calculations, which are lower than those that have been going around. And we have suggestions as to where the adjustments in appropriations could occur in order to release that $500 to $700 million that we believe is necessary from the 1st of January onwards. Waiting for the 2016 budget is not going to be enough. We are particularly worried about this from the point of view of the historically black universities that are struggling. They do not have reserves that they can borrow from for 3 months. Many of them seem to us, and the minister has sort of confirmed this, to be on the verge of bankruptcy. Will they be thrown into bankruptcy in the first 3 months of the year because there's no relief against the 0% fee increase? So we would like this committee, the Appropriations Committee, to consider this proposal seriously. And also, thereby, to send a clear message to Treasury that government must adjust its priorities. We do need to send a message to government that Treasury has to recognize the depth of the problems in this ministry, the depth of the problems for students, and for the department to manage and run itself, and for the whole future of our society. I'd like to just quickly comment on the CHE presentation, which I thought was much too modest in its analysis of the problems. The department was far more on the ball as to what the real issues are. The kinds of solutions with respect that the CHE is proposing are piecemeal, very small scale, and we are looking at billions of rand shortage in higher education, which are not going to be solved by those kinds of solutions. I think something more fundamental needs to be done, and I'd like to hear from the Treasury, from the department who mentioned a political decision having to be made somewhere. Well, where does that have to be made? Who's going to make it? And on the short-term funding thing, is the Appropriations Committee prepared to propose an adjustment so that the January to April appropriations can be redirected towards higher education? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Member. We'll appeal that Honourable Members will be very pointed in their submissions. The department's submission was very helpful, structured, reflect, went really on the specific issues on how we should move forward. The third hand.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. We believe the Minister is very serious about coming to ask the Appropriations Committee. I'm a member. So I think the fact is that he takes it very serious. I think we have a very difficult decision to not agree with the funding. So we please that you hear, Minister, and I'm sure at the end of our meeting today, once you've left and we at the Appropriations Committee sits, we'll probably find the money that you want it, so we appreciate that.
Sorry, Chair, I'm saying I'm advising him and tell Professor Pozuri that I do attend committee meetings.
Sorry, Chair, this is the minister's taken up my time.
Yes, you can make a point out.
I'm talking about the money, I'm not talking about the committee meetings. I'm a member of this group. Okay, one of the targets that was indicated by year 2030, that the target is that 1.6 million rand students register, you know, it would have been easier and we wouldn't have been in this situation if the costing of that was done. And Minister Nzimande says that, you know, we are the victims of our own success, and maybe that's where the problem came in. So I think going forward we need to make sure that when we do our budget, we need to make sure that our costing is accurate, so that we don't end up with these shortfalls, because the consequences are devastating. I just want to refer, and the reason why I'm doing this or taking up a little time is because I understand there are many members that want to contribute, so I'm going to be very brief here. We on slide number 6, there is reference made to poor people and when resources become available. My question is just for clarification. Who are poor? What is the benchmark? Is there a definition of
poor people so that we know who we're dealing with. And then obviously the concern I have is that it states that when the funds or the resources become available, now that is might be problematic because it might be in 2030 and we don't have the time. We can't wait until then. On slide number 7, I know that the shortfall it's indicated is going to be made up of from funding from universities and funding from government. Now, two questions I have with regards to that is, the universities that are going to fund this shortfall, is it going to be spread equally, first place, and have they agreed to this funding? Okay, and then there's one on slide number 9 which concerns me, not slide number 9, sorry, slide number 11. Slide number 11 concerns me because we talk about an underfunding of NSFAS. And the figures that are given there shows that NSFAS funding is decreasing. 6%, 4.6%, 4.5.3%. However, if you look at the administration costs, so you're looking at less money to manage or to administer, but if I look at the last 3 years, your administration costs have increased by 34%, 28%, and 18 or 19%. Surely there's a problem there. So it seems as though those who are administering the NSFAS fund are causing a problem as well. I mean, if we look at the last year, you're looking at a difference of 28 million. That's a lot of money for an increase, sorry, of 28 million. So perhaps one needs to look at that. And then lastly, Honourable Chair, is the we heard from the Minister that there's a task team now, and there's a shortfall of 4.4 billion rand. When we hear that will be finalised by the end of this month, yeah. We would like to appeal to the Minister, because we probably are going to find the funding for him. We would like to appeal to him is to try and, we don't have time. The end of November, exams have already been written. Students need to know what is going to happen to them. Are they going to be accepted at university next year? And what is going to happen to them? Are they going to not be excluded from next year's studies? So at least they can plan accordingly. Thanks, Honourable Chair.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Honourable Member. Number 4.
Thank you.
I thought you made a double booking. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Maybe I should start by welcoming the presentation. Well informative and well presented. Chair, I will make general comments. Moving from the Polokwane conference, the ruling party made a pronouncement in terms of its resolution that there shall be free education for all. This call was made mindful of the limited resources that we had, but taking into account that we have to avail those resources for the students to benefit from such. Now, the student protest, as alluded earlier, was very legitimate, very right, flowing from that resolution. However, from what the minister has said, while we acknowledge and accept that this was legitimate, I knew that Isaac was going to speak. He doesn't like when I deal with letters in the fashion that I'm doing. you know that students have got the right to protest, but and they are protesting with legitimate. I must acknowledge from the onset. I must, however, acknowledge the fact that there is an expectation from us as ordinary people, when you look at students at university in the manner that they protest, that their level of consciousness is expected to be higher than just ordinary people, and would be mindful of damaging government property, their own property that they will use tomorrow, that they would have been the first people to have cautioned and said, let us not destroy property and protect this property. I am also very, very happy to learn that flowing from the Ramaphosa, the now deputy president commission, that the government is not reactive and that the government is proactive. I was very worried that as government we lead a broader society, and as such, if there are sporadic protests, is this the manner in which we would react to such incidences, because they may set a wrong precedent. Mm. But I am very happy that government has started this process of addressing funding of students from time immemorial, and it's receiving the proper attention. The other issue that I wanted to address is the issue of the autonomy versus what is usually said, that the minister is interfering or intervening. When is the department intending to resolve this issue so that it is put to a rest forever and there is no confusion about interference and intervention? And if there is a need for it to be legislated, so be it. Now, Ezra, I always warn you, I've never said you should join.
Is that an indication that you are done?
No. You see, if that is disturbing me and you're not protecting me every time, Chair. See, this is a member. You see, Minister, you have said that government is a victim of its own success, and that the enrollment that we have accepted after the new dispensation has created the problem that we are faced with. But what are the mechanisms that we have that seeks to address this issue? Thank you very much. And I'm sure that EFAC has learned.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Number five? Yes, you were in about. Thank you, coaches. My first contribution will be in line with the one that was done by Professor Bozoli. There are 12 universities, and they are defined by their previous conditions, who will not survive the first 4 months of the year. And we all know that. And some of them are even crippling with problems as we speak. And for me, it will be appreciated if whatever we do here, we start focusing on those universities. The majority of them actually did not participate in the protest because they've been protesting for years and no one ever listens to them. There was the Marcus Balindulo report. I would like to know, what happened to those recommendations? Did the ministry ever attempt to read, understand, and see how that energy suggested there could be progressively infused in the system? We are not here by accident. We have known about these problems. Even when consistently resolutions are passed by the other party, there is no follow-up at the level of administration. And then when things go to this level, we are then brought to meetings like this. Somebody should have taken caution many years ago, many times, on several occasions. Things have been happening. Warning signs have been there. Maybe the problem is when a black poor child speaks, there is a high level of not intending to listen. But then we obviously start to listen because VEF, UCT, and everybody else starts to move. When you listen to the strike of TUT of 2014, if we did care, 22 cars were burned. Read the memorandum. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member.
Yes. Number six.
Thank you.
please lead by example.
I know what I start speaking, you will say I must be very brief. But members from the other side, they are even given 5 minutes. So, anyway, I'll be very short because, you know, colleagues have covered a number of issues here. I just want to just conscientize and just make the minister aware or everybody here that we seem to be worrying much about these, funds. When you check this financial year, I think we have more than 600 billion unspent. And I think that could be a point of departure for, resolving this problem. We can talk a lot of stories because, you see, many departments returned, you know, billions of rents unspent. If I could be accurate, maybe it could be around 627 billion, which are funds which were returned to National Treasury. And maybe number two, I can also comment about, if maybe you could be up to date, you check the manner in which, SARS has collected the revenue. It could be this reason that, maybe we could have collected less and appropriated the more billions to departments, which have, of course, failed to use the very same billions. So maybe without wasting much of your time, this could be a very good point of departure for all of us. So some of the departments, year in and year out, as I've been on course for serious concern, they are not spending more money, and that money maybe could be used to patch, this a problem that we all of us are facing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Members, as we indicated earlier, because the minister is going to leave around 12, we'll allow him sufficient time to deal with the issues that he can handle, and then we'll have further discussions. I think the department is here, the deputy minister is here, and the department is here. So let's allow the minister. Thanks, Minister. Yes, I noted you for later discussion. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Obviously, on some of the questions, the deputy minister or the DG and the officials may come in, those that require a bit more technical detail.
Yes, on what point?
Can we ask whether the minister can stay? This is a hugely important.
Sorry, that's
thing.
Out of order now. Let's allow. Just we have allowed. The
just
minister
the
has made a request. We have indicated. So let's allow the minister to respond. There is no crisis. Let's allow flow of discussion. Thanks, Minister.
Here, thank you, Chair. Honorable Bozon, what happens in case I'm needed for the same matter in cabinet? Then going to go out and say I'm not respecting the committee, I'm prioritizing the executive. I must be everywhere at the same time. Yes. I'm not the Holy Spirit. Thank you, Chair, for giving me an opportunity. I think that let's appreciate, first of all, that across all parties there is an understanding that perhaps this department is much bigger than we had thought, and it's got a much bigger responsibility than we might have originally thought, and that there is a reality that some of its mandate is unfunded. I was hoping Professor Pozzoli would stick to that and not try to say this is what the DA has been saying, because it's incorrect. All these things are in our white paper, which we started ourselves. Even the whole idea of the concept of post-school education and training, which, by the way, is very unique in many instances. Even in international forum, people are quite interested and excited about this concept of post-school rather than just higher education, was as a result of this extensive consultations, firstly through the green paper process and so on. Now, the issue of the I agree with the Honorable Shope about that emphasis as well, which is quite important. Now, the first 4 months thought that we had indicated that in the input. I can't remember whether it was the DG or the CFO. There is this money that we've allocated to HDIs, you know, historically disadvantaged institutions, the $2 billion over 5 years. For now, we're going to use part of that to try and cushion. It doesn't mean that we are taking it away, because it's over a five-year period. So that we make sure that the HDIs, they do have some money to be able to deal with the first 4 months. Then we'll manage it in the outer years. The your wealthier universities, by the way, have agreed. They volunteered, many of them, in terms of the no fee, their contribution, and the first 4 months. That they will use some of the reserves that they have to be able to deal with this particular matter. It was not an imposition, fortunately, from anyone. They offered that themselves. So we're less worried about that aspect for now. It does not mean that it does not have financial implications. I mustn't be misunderstood. Now, the benchmark of who is poor is the 122,000 for NSFAS purposes, that all those families who are earning not more than 122,000 rand per annum qualify for NSFAS. Now, this has been the case for donkey's ages now. That's why the DG was saying we have to review that. But review is easy. The issue is financial implications of review. Because that benchmark of poor excludes, by the way, if you look at lots of students who are protesting and leading, they are not NSFAS students. They come from your lower middle class, the ones who do not benefit from NSFAS, yet they are not rich. Frankly, they are the children of your civil servants, if I can make an example. Of your police, your nurses, those who are earning possibly, I mean, more than 122,000 per annum, total family income, by the way. But still, university education is very expensive. That is why we've been doing this other exercise of how do we address that. Now, I think that addressed the issue of the benchmark and whether the universities have agreed. We do agree that we have to work quickly to give signal and conclude identification of this 2.3 billion. We are aware that we cannot keep universities guessing. It's November. Their financial year starts in January. They need to be finalizing their budgets and all that. All we can say is that we are committed to find the money. We are committed to find the money. Now, what the resolution, by the way, in Polokwane is free education for the poor. Free higher education for the poor. For the poor. At least up to the first undergraduate qualification, which normally was what causes us problems with your, at your universities of technology, with your BTEC. Because a BTEC is a second qualification, but in terms of university degree structure, it's an undergraduate qualification. But you do it after having gotten a diploma. So there's always been this fight that we should also, NSFAS must also fund BTEC, but we say BTEC is a second qualification which we haven't agreed upon, which is something that we continue to engage around. We also do agree that we must ensure that work with the student leaders and all the students to ensure that there is no vandalism in protests. Students have the right to protest just like any other South African, but we must emphasize the issue that there must be no destruction of property or violence and so on. We have been doing that as a department in engagements, both in public as well as our own engagements with the students. this issue of autonomy, government policy from white paper number 3, done 1997, has always said to ensure both institutional autonomy and public accountability. Precisely because we understood, Chair and Honourable Members, that in many instances, institutional autonomy can be abused. And here in our country, some of our universities have abused institutional autonomy to try and block transformation. Zimande must not come anywhere near our institution. He is interfering with institutional autonomy in order to keep some campuses lily white. That's unacceptable. That is why there is this balance of institutional autonomy and public accountability, because these are public institutions, they must be held accountable publicly. So that's the balance. Obviously, there will always be a fight and a debate around that. Some will tend to emphasize more autonomy than public accountability, others public accountability more than autonomy. Fortunately, Chair, I've just gazetted today the bill that is coming to Parliament, which at the heart of it is dealing with that matter. So it's in your hands. It's in your hands how you actually finalize that. But it's one area we have also agreed that you can't just finalize it through legislation only. We need a conversation. It's one of the issues we've agreed to at the summit, that we need a conversation on this matter. And also the meeting of the 23rd with the President and the various stakeholders also put this issue, that it's one of the issues that we must continue to have a discussion and a debate on an ongoing basis. Honorable, but well, the mechanisms to address funding, by the way, is what all of us here are trying to look at. That's why we are very pleased that we've been invited to the joint committee or committees, you know, on appropriation. Honorable Mbatha, I think I've addressed the issue of the first 4 months. We will make sure that we don't allow your HDI to have difficulties on this. Now, what was the Marcus Valentino report? Oh, the NESFAS review. Okay. The NESFAS review is being implemented. And I'm happy to address this, by the way, very briefly with your permission, Chair, that this idea that I've been sitting on a report and doing nothing about it, it's not true. I don't know how many times I need to say it. That report was presented to all the stakeholders. The moment we released it, I looked at it, I engaged all the stakeholders on that report. As a matter of fact, they have that report. That report also, its contents has been presented to all the decision makers in government and outside government who are key in implementing this. Now, if a report says free higher education for the poor is feasible. By the way, it doesn't leave it there. It says, but it would require funding. Now, if there is a report that is with us that is saying that, it does not mean that it has become government policy. Because in order for it to become government policy, it will require that government commits money to implement it. Now, I engaged all the stakeholders. It was not a secret document. We didn't want to publicize the document as if EHET is in an opportunistic manner putting pressure on the Treasury. We don't operate like that as government. But it has never been secret. That's why it hasn't been difficult to release the document. Because it has been with stakeholders. And anybody who wanted it would give that document to the press. So, most of the things, I would argue that most of the things that we've been doing now around NESFAS were part implementation of aspects of that report that we could implement outside of huge commitments from Treasury. Which will also address this question, Chair, that who have not been doing anything. Let me quickly just illustrate. For instance, we've done away with interest on NSFAS being charged from the day you get given money as a student, because that was what was happening. That the moment we are doing first year, we have get given NSFAS and interest start accumulating right away. It was a recommendation from that report which said, Minister, no, start charging interest 1 year after graduation, which is what has been happening. That was implementing what was in that report. The final year was not actually in that report, but that was our interpretation that part of incentivizing students to reach final year is that your final year, you're going to get full funding, and if you pass, it's going to be converted to a full bursary, not a loan. Those were some of the things that were coming out of that report that we are already implementing. Our bids to Treasury and engagement in government have always been informed by the fact that we want to reach this goal of free higher education for the poor. And that has been our Bible, as it were, that report, in terms of the things that we are doing. That is why even those who tried now to publicize it as if they were secret, they ended up writing two paragraphs, because they realized that actually someone was just malicious somewhere trying to say we were sitting on a report, which was not the case at all. Chair, just to conclude, no, I have actually addressed all that I want to address. It's just that I get tempted, you know, when it's the EFF who spoke last, you know, just to go a bit more, you know, get into the ring, yeah, because you also stole other people's colors, you know. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, for leading the department submission to this important hearing on finding the, I think, on addressing issues of funding and finding sustainable measures to deal with higher education. Now, Minister, you're welcome. If you're ready to leave, thanks. We'll proceed. I think I noted few hands. It was his hand first. Okay, there are other issues that need to be responded to.
Yes.
Okay.
To matter.
All right. Thanks, EG.
I think it would be incorrect not to clarify the matter. When the strike happened at TUT, I was there myself in addressing the issues and investigated quite thoroughly what actually happened. At that stage, what came out was that TUT needed about 52 million to pay into student fees. At the same time, at National Student Financial Aid Scheme, it had about 97 million which was not claimed. Hence the matter thereafter was easily addressed. So in some instances, some of these disruptions do happen purely on the basis of institutional deficiencies, not necessarily in respect to the broader issues as we are discussing here today. But the only thing that we don't do when we engage with institutions on such matters at an operational level, we don't go to the media and say, look at them. We address them, afford them an opportunity to correct those matters, and we move on. That's why you won't be able to pick up a lot of engagements and interventions that we are doing on daily basis, especially in historical disadvantaged institutions. But to say they are neglected, it's not correct. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, DG. Prof, I want to check you for Prof Narat, if there's a specific matter you want to respond to. No? Okay, yes.
Just on the total amount surrendered that was brought up in one of the questions, Perhaps just to indicate that on the exact figures that I have with me, since the 2012-13 financial year, we received in total 1.026 billion rand, if you look at our boat over the 3 years. Our amount surrendered back to revenue was 6.8 million, which is 0.006%. So we basically every year use all our money that we have. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much to the CFO. I thought he's Professor. So Professor is at the back. Thanks. Let me just direct the meeting. I noted you, Honorable Member. I noted at the back, she's gone now. Okay, number two. Doctor, yes. And then three, four, five, yes. And then, yes, Honorable Kekan, I noted you. Then, yes, thanks. In that order, first hand.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I want to, before I get into some of my questions, I want to raise a point which I feel has been mischievously conflated here today. And that is around the reports that have been discussed. There's a report on NSFAS, and then there's a report on fee-free higher education that was compiled by a working group chaired by Professor Derek Swartz. The two separate reports that have been completed here today. The report with the allegation of the minister sitting on the report is the second report. And the minister says that he has presented it to all stakeholders or all relevant stakeholders, which is not true. He has not presented it to Parliament, unless Parliament is not a relevant stakeholder, if that is what the minister is saying. And the issue here, Chairperson, the reason why I raise this is that all of a sudden now we want to say that, or the government wants to say, well, we're not being reactionary, we've been having reports, we've been acting on reports, and that's not the case. Today we sit in an appropriations or a meeting with appropriations as a result of protest action that has been taking place across the country, not as a result of foresight by this government. And that is something that we need to acknowledge, so that we do not repeat the same mistakes that we have been making. In fact, this is something that should have been happening a long time ago. Now, there's clearly a shortfall. The minister says he's been talking about it for a long time. And I'm making an appeal to the Appropriations Committee that is here, that is present. You have a responsibility. And history is going to judge you. Now, as late as it may be in the day, Chairperson, the appeal is to say that let us see this Appropriations Committee redeem itself. You have a mandate in terms of adjustments within the budget. You have that mandate. And that you must exercise that mandate in order to ensure that the priorities within government expenditure is corrected. That is a mandate that you have. And if you fail in that mandate, then we're going to see this problem perpetuate, and it's going to snowball continuing going forward. Secondly, Chairperson, in the figures that was presented, there was shortfalls for the MTEF period for NSFAS in universities that was presented, for university baseline funding, for TVET college baseline funding. But there were no figures that were presented in terms of CET, as well as the NSFAS amounts within TVET colleges as well. So I'd like the department to provide figures on that, because currently as we stand, there are students that are simmering at these TVET colleges. They have not received any transport allowances, and therefore they have not been able to make it to class. They have been charged upfront fees, which I suppose the department wouldn't know about fully, because they themselves admittedly said that there is a shortfall in their own monitoring and evaluation. And I know this for a fact, because I've written to the minister on occasions, and the minister says, well, no, they're not charging fee increases, but we know for a fact that that is happening. So there is a problem in the monitoring and evaluation. It must be taken into account when we're looking at appropriations as well. But I want to know, in terms of the NSFAS at TVET colleges in particular, the shortfalls around that for planning purposes going forward. Lastly, Chairperson,
we need to deal with immediate issues as well. There are long-term issues, but this committee has a mandate for immediate issues. The institutions that are going to be opening their doors next year, there are students that are going to be disadvantaged because they, and not because of their own fault, but because of the manner of them not being funded by NSFAS and leaving them with debts. Those students are being excluded. And there are some institutions where they are being prevented from writing examinations. There are other institutions that are saying that they will not receive their results in order to apply for bursaries or for further funding. And many of them will not be able to register, which means that they will not be able to access any further financial aid. So this is something that we have not heard from the department about, and I want to hear from the department particularly what are the plans around those students that are very, very angry. In fact, most of the protests that have continued after the 0% increases were not were about this issue. It was about the issue of the workers, and it was about the issue of the students that are going to be continue to be excluded because of their indebtedness. And we have not received any guidance as to how that is going to be dealt with. And lastly, Chairperson, the immediate funding that must be appropriated, a decision must be made by the Appropriations Committee today as to say that in order to ensure that these institutions remain sustainable, that funding is made available going forward, and that in the future, for future periods, that will be put at the top priority of the agenda. Thank you.
Thanks. We'll clarify the purpose of the meeting today, the public hearing. We'll deal with that when you outline the way forward. Honorable Mato.
No, thanks, Honorable Coaches. Chair, one would want to welcome the presentation by the department and by the CHP. Honorable Chair, we appreciate the now cooperation of all stakeholders to the issue of education. I think it's long overdue, Chair. I recall that the minister has been running around talking about the transformation of education in South Africa. And there were challenges that there were non-cooperation, and as a result, others were saying he is interfering and at some stage taken to court for just trying to raise this matter to say that we need a transformation in education. And Chair, I think now one appreciates that we all now realize that the issue of education is not a matter of a minister, is not a matter of universities or high institutions of learning. It is a societal matter. We need to cooperate when we deal with that particular matter, not to score political scores on that particular matter, because it's critical. We know that the student has been raising these matters, especially in the previously disadvantaged universities, without other stakeholders realizing that what is being raised, it's something that we must take very seriously as a nation, not because it is raised by those poor students that are in the former black universities. And one appreciates that now we are all looking for solutions. That's what is important. Chair, whilst we are looking for the solution on the issue of funding, Chair, I think we must also look at the core drivers of the expenditure in the high institution of learning. And we appreciate that the department is not only focusing at the universities, it's focusing on the funding of the post-school education and training sector. And I think we must not lose sight of this. We appreciate. And I think also when we deal, I want to check to the DG and the DM to say that there is a team that has been appointed by the president, whether the approach of that particular team is looking for the funding of the post-school education and training, or whether they are just focusing at the university. Because really, if we focus only on the university, I think it will be a problem. And also on the issue of the reviewal of the 100, the families, total families that are earning 122,000. I think it is correct, but at the moment, one looks at it that maybe it will create more problems. Because when you look at the presentation also, I wanted to check whether also the team that the president has appointed is also going to look at the number of unfunded registered students that qualify but not assisted. Because one look at this particular matter to say that you can't just look only at the universities and then ignore, because there are other also in the TVET colleges, young people that are registered but does not qualify, but did not qualify to get this NSFAS, but they qualify according to the criteria, but because of the constrained resources, whether it's going to take into consideration all those particular matters or it's a focus in the universities only, living outside the TVET colleges. It's a clarity that one would want to check, Honorable Chair. But I think the Department of Higher Education has been consistent in indicating the underfunding of the department. Even beginning of this year, they came to the appropriation. They were still making a plea to say that, please, this department is underfunded. It is not because the students have now, you know, raised their demands and much. It is something that the department has been consistently indicating. Even in the beginning of this year, we even talked with Honorable Manana to say, you see now the budget, it is not going to this direction. The way the department has come to us as appropriation to request for the increase of funding or the budget around the issue of the Department of Education. I think now because we are all in our senses and we see that this matter of education is a societal matter, we are going to achieve a good result when we deal with that particular matter. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Honorable Mkunu, after that, Honorable Mayor, after that, Kehila, Eunice, and Keka. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation from the Department and PHE. I want to reiterate the fact that our government has declared education as an apex priority. And then this tells us that our funding of the system should be significantly high. Clearly, as it has been presented, if we invest in education, we are investing in the country's future. All presentations reflected that there is a serious underfunding in the post-school education and training sector. And I appreciate that we all speak in one voice, that we do need more funding for the post-school education and training sector. The shortfalls have been mentioned by my colleagues in the university baseline per annum, excluding NSFAS, your TVET colleges, and community colleges. And this tells us that really there is a crisis. We are hoping that this hearing today will yield positive results. The committee has been recommending to Treasury for many years for additional funding for post-school education and training sector, and there was no significant injection of funds into the sector. I would like to know from Treasury why was Treasury not ascending to the bids presented by the department and recommendations by the portfolio committee on the funding crisis. I thank you.
Thanks very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. With respect, Deputy Minister, let's get to the veggies. You've conceded that there is a funding shortfall as a result of the 0% fees increase in this financial year, the 2015-16 financial year. What's at issue here is, what is the shortfall? It appears from the presentation that the shortfall is somewhere between 500 million and 700 million. But from our purposes, what we need is a number. What is the shortfall in this financial year, and what is the breakdown of that shortfall? That really is all we need, if you could give us that number. That's my question. I'd like to then just make a comment. Without in any way diminishing the Freedom Charter or the ruling party, I just want to put it on record that I think it is completely inappropriate for the Director General of a department in a departmental presentation of government to cite the Freedom Charter and the Polokwane resolutions. I know that the Minister aspires to live in Russia, but we don't live in Russia yet. There is a separation between party and state, and I think it's incumbent on the Director General to bear that in mind in the future. Thank you.
Thanks. The issues will be responded to. Honourable Gaila, I noted you. You no longer waive your right. It's acceptable if you are covered. Thanks.
The presentation by CHE, I just want clarity on the graduate check. Secondly, in your presentation, CHT, I don't see you mentioning the wealth tax. One would have thought that you would include the wealth tax as well, and also the private sector, because at the end of the day, some of these students go and work at the private sector. Then lastly, Deputy Minister, from the media reports, it is very clear that after exams, these protests are going to continue. If you follow the media, they want free education. That is the bottom line. Now, if that be the case, what plans have you got in place for that? And unfortunately, the minister is not here. I'm not sure, I was not in Polokwane. I don't know the Polokwane resolution. But what I am clear of is that in your posters during election, you said free education. Posters were very clear. So I'm not sure what the difference between your posters and the Polokwane resolution. And your manifesto also was very clear that free education for all. Sorry, ma'am. And Fazami is up. Kindly, Fazami.
Resolution 44 of
they want free education. What plans have you got? And what lessons have you learned in other countries where they have free education? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Gaila. Honorable Keka.
Thanks. Just a few comments. I'm firstly surprised by Honorable Mina because I mean, all over the world, in America, in the so-called matured and advanced democracies, in Britain, Europe, the ruling party get guided in its policies, in its action, by the organization they belong to. Actually, even in South Africa, whatever DA is doing in opposition, that is derived from what DA as an organization conference decides upon. So why does Mr. Milner expect us to do different? This is a common international practice that the ruling party that wins election gets guided by the organization it belongs to, resolutions taken in that organization's conferences and so on. It's happening all over the world. The second point is on Kasim. You know, whenever the minister... No, I don't have problems with Honorable Sentis. Yes, Honorable Kasim. You know, whenever he speaks and we live with him, we know him. This thing of aspersion against the minister, abusing, attacking the repetition, the image, the face, the personality, the repetition of the minister is common. And if this happened in our portfolio, whenever he's going to speak, I can predict that she'll use words like mischievous, like he started today. Look, the minister is not responsible for poverty in this country. And the people who are responsible know themselves from our past. And don't pretend and don't cover up poverty with the minister. It has happened for a very long time, and address the issue that we are raising, and this leads to my question. My question to the council professor is that you, one of the suggestions you're considering was graduate taxation. The question I want to ask is that not going to create an impression that you're punishing graduates for graduating by taxing them? Is it not better to form an educational student solidarity tax? You know, countries like Germany, when the Berlin Wall fell, there was a solidarity tax to help the Eastern Bloc poor. Don't we need something like that to focus on education? And would then tax the people who own, who invest locally and internationally, and the middle class, and whoever can afford to pay that tax. Affordability will be the key, rather than graduate, which is like punishing people who graduate. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. Honorable Yunus.
Thank you, Chairperson. As my colleagues have already said a mouthful, I want to say again to my Honorable Sheila Shopetsol has already said that will, as appropriation bill will appropriate the money. I agree with her fully. And as our committee, we follow the money. What you are producing, please let you produce the skills that country needs. Because in 20 years time now, we are still, or many departments are still crying of skills. Because, so I don't know if you need more money. I agree with you. You need more money, and we will make some means for you to get it. But please produce the stuff that country we need. Thank you.
Thanks. The last two members I give you, please be brief. Two is Prof and Honorable Gawas.
Thank you, Chair. I will be brief. It's very good to hear that the department has found money to pay for the first 3 months of the year out of the 2 billion. However, I think that is a constant problem in the crisis in higher education, which is that a crisis hits and the poor old department, which is the most underfunded department for what it's expected to do in the entire government, finds the money somewhere. Now, basically what that means is that somewhere, something else in the department will be paying for that problem. So if President Zuma is going to declare that there's a 0% fee increase, it, to me, should be the broader government budget that pays for that, not the departmental budget. And that is the point that I'm making to the Appropriations Committee. I do believe that for that 3 or 4 month period, for that 700 or 500 million or however much it is, appropriations need to send a message that they are tired of this department having to shoulder the burden of extra amounts every single time there's a crisis, and that they want to see something more happening in relation to higher education.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Honorable
I want to say that you know, Parliament must resist the temptation to want to take over the day-to-day running of universities. I hear some of the comments here which attempt to do that, and that's very dangerous. You can't be talking about fees that are owed and students can't write exams, etc., and so on, because they've not paid this or that and the other thing, and want Parliament to take decisions on that. It's not possible. So we must not try to do that. The second thing is that you know, the allegation that the Standing Committee and the Select Committee on Appropriations are meeting specifically to address this issue is not quite correct. These two committees are engaged in a process of dealing with the MTBPS. Even if there was no higher education crisis, we still would have met to process the MTBPS. Don't put SCOA and the Select Committee under pressure and say you must take a decision now, because we are not going to do that. We will, in processing these bills, make recommendations to Parliament, and Parliament will then take the issues further. We are aware that there are immediate issues that must be resolved the first 4 months of the academic year, and so on. But also, and finally, I think that parliaments of committee must engage themselves with the long-term solution of this issue. And Honorable Schopestolle has alluded to this, that we must find money. And I know that once you touch that issue and you make reference to taxes, some people become quite jittery. And you might have to carry them to Chris Barnard Hospital to be treated for high blood pressure. But the fact of the matter is that government must find money, and money doesn't grow on trees, and it doesn't fall from the sky like the biblical manna. So let's not beat about the bush. Let's find money, and one of the major ways of finding money is taxes. One thing that we must probably avoid to do is part of the tax that is called VAT, because VAT will hit hard on the poor. At the time when we're trying to alleviate the financial pressures from the poor. That's my submission, Chairperson. Let's, as parliamentarians, let's not repeat about the bush. Let's resolve the country's problems.
Thanks, Honorable Member. Honorable Member.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to assist my neighbor, Mr. Mania, who is worried about the quoting from the Freedom Charter. You know, I went into a lot of effort to find the definition of a budget, because that is what we're dealing with. And if you go into Google, you can find it in some dictionary. A budget is a tool with which the ruling party expresses its policy, period.
Thank you, Honorable Member.
Just on a short difference in the lighter note, I wonder if the professor from the Council on Higher Education would clarify that what he actually meant to say in his slide, with the last slide of his conclusion, was that greater transparency and accountability over funds allocated for higher education from the public purse and how these are utilized, not the alternative, which I won't mention.
Thanks very much. Earlier, I noted, Michael, whether you want to come now. I think let's allow Michael first to start. National Treasury, Michael is DDG Public Finance Treasurer.
DDG Budget Office.
Budget Office.
I have my colleague, Dondo Mohajani, who's DDG Public Finance.
Okay. Thanks.
So,
a number of questions have been raised in respect of National Treasury. I think, firstly, just to say that one of the important things that has emerged from the protests over the last few weeks has been a flowering of engagement about the budget and how we allocate the budget, which is exactly as it should be, because the budget is a political process that takes place in a democratic society. So it's not so much for National Treasury to decide the priorities in the budget. It's a democratic process in which Parliament participates, the executive as a whole participates, and of course we execute those decisions. In an article a couple of weeks ago, or this week, by Kanti Pai in Business Day, he spoke of how the Chilean student movement, after protesting for no fees, went on to conduct a detailed analysis of the budget of the Chilean government to identify where the resources could be drawn from in order to finance that. And I think that's the kind of exercise that we as National Treasury certainly would welcome, and the whole of government would welcome. And we should, in fact, try and engage even with the student movement to engage in that kind of a process. So let's be clear. I mean, in the department's presentation, the indication is that the higher education sector needs additional funding of about 30 billion rand per annum, increasing at a rate far faster than CPI. 9.8% higher education inflation plus increase in enrollment. So let's say 10 or 11% a year. 30 billion per annum growing at 10 or 11% a year, in a budget as a whole that is growing at about 7 or 8% a year. Now, there are essentially four ways that we can mobilize those resources. So it's not a question of National Treasury is sitting somewhere with this money and it doesn't want to allocate the money. That's not the situation we're in. We're all asking the question, where can these resources be mobilized? And there are essentially four ways, I would suggest, that we need to think about. The first, as the last honorable member has just mentioned, is raising taxes. And there are various suggestions on the table. The Minister of Finance, in his MTVPS statement, said that he'd asked the Davis Commission to look into a wealth tax. If we were to raise VAT to get this 40 billion, it would be about a 2% increase in VAT that we would need to mobilize. If we were to raise personal income tax, it would be a significant addition to personal income tax. The difficulty we face in raising taxes now is that the economy is performing very poorly. And even if we wanted to raise taxes in general, it wouldn't make sense for us necessarily to raise taxes immediately in an economy that is performing this poorly. Because with growth of 1.5%, raising taxes from a macroeconomic point of view is exactly the same as cutting expenditure. You are likely to reduce economic growth. So while we raised taxes in February, we raised the PIT rate, but the amount of tax revenue we got was less than we were expecting because growth was revised down. So you need to look at the growth picture and the tax picture. But nevertheless, the one area where we could mobilize resources is raising taxes. And society has to debate and come to a conclusion. Obviously, the executive will need to table proposals in Parliament at some point, but raising taxes is one element of the answer, could be one element of the answer. The second is to reprioritize spending from other areas of spending. But let's be clear, there are no easy choices in doing so. Because if we are talking about 30 to 40 billion rands from within the budget, this is not the kind of quantum of resources that can be easily found, say, by efficiency improvements or cost-cutting measures. You're talking about a significant reprioritization, which will inflict significant pain on other areas of government spending. So it's easy to say that we must allocate more to higher education, but then if you leave it to National Treasury to decide where the money comes from, you're not taking your full responsibility. Because the money can come from health, but colleagues in the health department might well justifiably argue that health is also underfunded. Some have suggested that we take it from basic education.
But basic education is also an important part of the value chain. The police, but we have problems with crime, defense. I don't know, I'm just putting out there. Some have suggested that we reduce the size of the cabinet, for example. Again, all of these are things that society must debate, but I think, just to put it in perspective, if you take the executive, parliament, all of the ministries, all of the provinces, legislators, all of their executives, the entire budget for executive and legislative services is about 12 billion rand. No doubt savings might be able to be found there. But if you're talking about a gap of university funding of 30 to 40 billion rand, then even if you halve the budget for legislative and executive services, which would significantly compromise the operation of the executive and legislature, even if you halve that budget, you've not really solved the problem substantially. So the first thing is raising taxes. The second thing is reprioritization. Both of those things involve significant, difficult decisions that society will have to make. The third element would be to rebalance expenditure within the post-school education system. The department has indicated that we shouldn't only focus on the university needs, we should focus on the whole post-school education system. On the other hand, the CETAs do continue to budget for significant surpluses over the MTEF. This means that the revenue they receive does not add up to the expenditure that they are planning. And therefore, this imbalance within the system that arises from an earmarked tax could also be something to look at. We raised in the budget in February the issue of earmarked taxes more generally. Earmarked taxes when we don't control it as the fiscus. It simply comes in and then it goes out. And we raised in the budget of February that there were two areas in particular where we were concerned that this was leading to imbalances. The one was in respect of the post-school education system, where we indicated CETAs are budgeting for surpluses while there are strains elsewhere in the system. The other was in respect of the UIF, which this year we reckon will accumulate a surplus, will add, it's already got a surplus of about 90 billion. It's going to add another 15 billion to its surplus this year. So the whole area of earmarked taxes is something that we need to look at as a country. So I've mentioned three so far: raising taxes, reprioritizing expenditure, rebalancing within the higher the post-school education system, and lastly, mobilizing resources for loans from the private sector. How do we make policy reforms that enable us to mobilize those lending funds? I think as a developing country, some might not see it as a blessing, but the financial sector in South Africa is more developed than the financial sector of any other developing country in the world. And I think in this case, we need to see that as a blessing and see how can we involve the financial sector in mobilizing finance for student loans. So I just wanted to say that I don't think it's a question of National Treasury digging under the table and putting the money on the table. It's a question of difficult decisions that we as a country need to make. Lastly, we do not believe that the adjustment budget tabled by the Minister of Finance will need to be amended to cover the shortfall that arises from the zero fee increase. We believe that the resources can be found without amending the budget. So thank you very much.
Thanks very much for that contribution, Mike. Let me allow Prof. You want to comment at the back on SHE? There was a specific question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The question is related to taxes and the form that taxation might take. One of the proposals is a graduate tax. Others that we've heard are the wealth tax. I think that the colleague there illuminated various implications for raising the vast quantum of funds which are required in order to, on the short term, cover the requirements of the no-fee increases. But the other considerations are how do we cover the costs of funding the poor in high, not only in higher education, but also in post-school education on an ongoing basis. We have had a quantum of about 30 billion rand that has been identified as a cost of funding higher education. But it's also been pointed out that we want to grow the TVET sector to 2.5 million, and we want to grow the college sector to 1 million over the planning period. And we have not quantified yet what those costs will be. So I think that you'll be looking at easily in the region of 100 billion rand if you quantify those costs. So what I'm urging is that we give consideration to the full implications of funding the post-school education and training sector to eliminate what the cost implications will be for growing the sector, even on an incremental basis over the planning period. Then I think we'll have a truer perspective on what the required funds are. And I think that there's been an overemphasis on universities because of the protests, but we must be careful that the other part of the post-school education and training sector is not neglected while we give attention to just the universities, because then we'll be doing a disservice to the poor and the marginalized in our society. Thank you.
Colleagues, let's allow the Deputy Minister and Department to deal with the rest of questions. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Co-Chairpersons, Honorable Members, colleagues from the Department and Treasury. Well, some of the questions and comments were directed to the Appropriations Committee. And of course, the DG will deal with some of the questions that are more technical in nature. Well, Honorable Kasim, well, through you, co-chairs, the report was presented to all higher education stakeholders. It was presented to all the relevant government departments, including National Treasury. But as well, it was discussed by the Portfolio Committee, the fourth parliament. So I'm just trying to again, you know, allay whatever fear that may exist, or rather, this thing that Honorable Kasim is going on about that we had actually withheld the report. It's not true. Some of the members who sat in the previous committee, the fourth parliament, will recall that this matter was discussed in the committee. Now, we have admitted that clearly our mandate is largely unfunded. We have come to this committee, and I'm glad that Honorable Madlopa is raising this matter. And we concur with you, Honorable Kasim, for the first time, that indeed this committee can assist in a huge way to help really in trying to solicit whatever funding that will speak to our mandate. Well, the DG will deal with the issue of figures that are required. On the issue of student debts that may possibly lead to exclusions, the Presidential Task Team is now seized with that task and responsibility. And we will await the outcome of that process. They are expected to submit a report to the President at the end of this month, at the end of November. So they are dealing with those issues, and the outcome will be communicated accordingly. Indeed, Honorable Madlopa, education is a societal issue. It can't cannot be the responsibility of government alone. And that is why we are calling on everybody, the private sector, as well, to make a rather meaningful contribution to the education of an African child. And we'll continue doing this, just so that we mobilize these resources in order to ensure that the post-school system is adequately funded and our young people are able to acquire the necessary skills that will obviously put them on a good stead for a prosperous life. Now, whether there was also a question by Honorable Majopa around the Presidential Task Team looking at the question was, is it looking at universities or is it looking at the post-school system as a whole? Well, the Presidential Task Team, Honorable Members, was established following a meeting between the President, University Council Chairs, Vice Chancellors, and student leaders, at the request of the University Council Chairs. So this task team is really looking at universities, because it was at the request of the university leadership to look broadly at issues of funding, but also to prepare for the 2016 academic year. So it is mainly looking at that. But of course, the President has intimated that he may be establishing a commission of inquiry, which we then hope will look at the entire post-school system and the funding thereof. He has not obviously given terms of reference. He has not pronounced when he will be establishing this commission of inquiry, but he has intimated that he's looking at that, and we therefore hope that that commission of inquiry will cover the entire post-school. But this presidential task team is really, and that is why it comprised of university leaders, your vice chancellors, council chairs, and student leaders, and of course officials from the Department of, from the Presidency, from the Department of Education and Training, and from Treasury. Well, I'm glad, co-chairs, that there is an acknowledgement from the honorable members that we have been placing our plea before this committee and various other committees, including the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education and Training, and the Select Committee on Education and Recreation, as it is called. We have been doing this for some time now. We have been putting bids to National Treasury. So we're the first ones, really, to say higher education and training is underfunded and something must be done. So in a way, we kind of anticipated, so we did not see it, and we're never comfortable in our in our own corners, thinking that no, nothing will actually happen or erupt in the manner that the student protest erupted. We were in a way anticipating it, because we have been saying it, that this sector, or rather this system, is underfunded. And we're happy that we've all gathered here today to have all the members from the different committees agreeing that indeed something will have to be done. Issue of shortfall, the DG, the CFO will touch on that. Media reports, Honorable Gaila, I'm not sure. We've not picked that up, but after the exams are starting again, I don't know which media or which newspapers you read, because we have made an undertaking. We have made an undertaking that we will now look at this thing much more closely, but that we are also committed to a free and quality higher education for the poor. Because it is the position of the ruling party, And we saw these, you know, sporadic protests as a way of our young people trying to remind their government to actually expedite and fast track that which was promised and that which was resolved around this issue of free higher education. So as the colleague from Treasury was giving the different options, those are options that we are now seized with. We are looking at all of them. We've got to definitely reprioritize so that a chunk of the allocation goes to that which this administration has prioritized. Education being a number one priority, health too, and all of those. So we'll have to do that. Whenever we agree on anything and we say it is a national priority, there has to be funding following that priority. So it's a matter of how do we deal with this. The experts will obviously look at all these matters. But there are proposals before us, corporate education tax, increase the skills levy, all those proposals are going to be looked at so that we see what is feasible, including the issue of wealth tax as it is proposed and all of that, so that we're able to deploy sufficient and adequate resources to the system. Well, the difficult decision that, of course, we have to take difficult decisions. I think we have reached a turning point. We have to take difficult decisions. And I agree, we have to take political decisions as well. And if Honorable Bozoli, who's my former lecturer, by the way, co-chairs, if Honorable Bozoli doesn't understand what taking political decisions is about, we'll tell after the meeting. But we will have to take difficult decisions, definitely, so that we do not see this thing happening in the future. Thank you very much. Maybe I'll hand over to the DG to do some.
Thanks, Tian.
Thanks,
Tian.
Thanks. On the report, which seems to be a bit contentious, Professor Balintulo's report, when it was concluded, the department established a task team to work out as to how the recommendations of this report could be implemented. And they've undertaken that task and came up with a report. That report was engaged amongst other forums where it was engaged. It was through what we refer to as policy dialogue, as well as colloquium, which is composed of the department, National Treasury, CHE, NSFAS, USAF, that's the forum of vice chancellors of universities, the forum as well of university chairs, of council, South African Association of Union of Students, that is South, all those structures who are operating within the sector and with the direct interest were engaged. And subsequent to that, honorable members would remember that there are numerous parliamentary questions that I personally answered in respect to this report to Parliament. And of course, administratively, I don't have a record in our system where we ever refused any instruction or request by the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education to present either on a report or any other thing. So if there is a missing there, I think it should not be interpreted as a deliberate attempt. It's just that perhaps we may not have paid that attention, all of us, but from our side, I think we've done our part. And I think also at the political engagement, the minister has met with alliance structures in respect to the engagement on the report itself. I think that clarifies the matter. The figures in respect to TVET colleges, slide 20, I think it explains, because the last bullet there is actually stating the current shortfall on the baseline, which is 7.2 billion, which over MTF is about 30.8 billion. And students at TVET colleges who are net first beneficiaries are not expected to pay upfront registration fees. I know the honorable member is talking about the matter of Lovedale TVET College that he referred to me, and I investigated the matter and gave a response in writing after engagement with the college and investigating what is actually happening. So all the matters that were brought to my attention, they have received that adequate attention by way of investigation and giving feedback thereof. Honorable member Munir, I was not aware of a Polokwane resolution, nor the Freedom Charter assertion, until I attended the summit on higher education, where student organizations across political affiliations, when they were talking about free education, they were making reference to Polokwane resolution, the Freedom Charter. And throughout this protest, also, that reference has been made. That forced me to go and look for this Polokwane resolution and the Freedom Charter. What does it actually say? That's why I thought perhaps it was important to move from that premise in trying to clarify the matter, because it is in the public discourse at the present moment. And as an administrator, I am called upon to fulfill this resolution by way of ensuring that free education is provided in the higher education sector. And it doesn't mean anything beyond that. I hope my sincere apology is acceptable in that regard. On CETA surpluses, Mike, I think on this question, we should bear in mind that CETA surpluses accumulated, especially for 2014-15, due to expenditure ceiling that was enforced by the Minister of Finance through the Cabinet in a letter dated 18 February 2013, and that ceiling has been lifted only last year. So the surpluses that we are talking about in respect to the levy grant system is as a result of the ceiling that was imposed, and the sitters had to comply to that, including the department of which we did. So that then accumulated surplus has already been committed in addressing a whole range of shortfalls that we are talking about today. It's no longer there available. I think it's important to make that indication, so that when we are looking at the various options, we should be mindful of where we should be looking for these monies to address the question of the shortfall. For 2015-16, what is expected in terms of surplus? It's less than 0.4 million, billion, which is about 400 million. That is our calculation. maybe a treasury would have more accurate calculation in respect to the issues. But I don't think we should be of the thinking that within the system of post-school education and training, there are monies that are sitting doing nothing, including the training of artisans in the country is actually assisted through these kinds of funds, because there is no allocation from the baseline yet. We are expected that we have to meet certain targets in rolling out the production of artisans in the country. So the demand and the commitment are quite huge in respect to the mandate of the department. So you'll apologize, you'll forgive me, Chair, if I haven't been able to answer all the questions. But I think we've attempted our level best. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, DG. Do you, from the side of education, anyone, there's no further clarity on any matter now? Just want to establish. Any question that was answered specifically? Yes? Specific matter that was answered?
Chair, when I put my question, I said, let's get to the veggies. What is the shortfall in this financial year which arises as a result of the 0% increase? What is the number? It appears to be somewhere between 500 and 700 million. If I'm incorrect, give us a number, because that is the number that we're going to use to adjust amend the adjusted budget.
The 0% fee increase is 2.330 billion
this financial year
for 2016.
So what is the level in this financial year? The first. I'm asking, what is the fee shortfall?
Is 2.330 billion
in 2016. So I would be correct then that the fee shortfall in this financial year is a proportion of 2.33 billion.
Now the question of the academic year and the financial year, they overlap. All right?
Yeah. What is less shortfall in this financial year?
Honorable Minister, the point is made. The department understands. Part of the outline of the presentation by the department has highlighted numbers, but I want to say further clarity on issues that are raised. The department is welcome to elaborate on the report that they have submitted so that there's clarity on all of us, even to clarify issues. What is mean when we say academic year? I mean, the minister did clarify that between now and what is it, early January, yes, we have indicated the figure. So I think the matters are well received. So we'll request if there's any other issue that the department wants to deal with, we can deal with it.
Chair, with respect, we've got 30 days. We need the number, and we need it now, so that we can amend the budget. It's probably 480 million.
CFO, can you comment on it?
Chair, can I indicate to the committee and all the other honorable members, for the current financial year, we do not need an additional allocation. The additional allocation would be applicable for the 2016-17 financial year. If we take the shortfall of 2.3 billion, a portion of that will be funded prior to 1 April from existing allocated funds, which was reprioritized. So it's not necessary to adjust the adjusted estimates to increase an allocation for the department for this financial year. 2015-16. So this current appropriation for 2015-16 does not need to be adjusted. All the money to be paid to institutions to cover a portion of the 0% fee increase will be paid out of existing allocations or surpluses, for example, within the NSF, which will be reprioritized to assist institutions. Additional allocations will be applicable in the 2016 MTF allocations to the partner, so therefore for the first allocation for the 2016-17 financial year. but not in the current financial year. That explains.
Thank you, CFO. No, I don't want, just before that, let me restate the point. We will interact with the Department of Education should there be further areas that we need to clarify. The matter is very well presented to us. And we welcome you, Deputy Minister, when you said that we have to deal. Our committee, this is not the end. The process unfolds of our committee. It's not the end. The process unfolds. But we have dedicated attention on an urgent matter of education. Two profound documents that you cited, the Constitution and the Freedom Charter, to say that we must conscientize the rest of society and what hard choices we make. We are going earnestly to be discussing those issues, what Treasury presented and so forth. We'll deal with those issues. So this is not the end of this committee. We have had the presentation. We'll clarify ourselves further on issues that we have presented. And with that, we want really to thank you because the money bill outlines the process in greater detail of how these committees of appropriations functions and how to amend the budget. How do you deal with the process of MTBPS, the process of amending the fiscal framework and revenue proposals. There are issues that we'll entertain. Further public hearings will be conducted. We'll deal with various sectors. Furthermore, we've got interest in this MTBPS as outlined by the Minister of Finance. So the process will unfold. Now, I want to advise the committee that we are also proposing amendments to our earlier agreed program, but that will be clarified very easily by the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Education. And I'll give you the opportunity, fellow colleague, to deal with this and your remarks, of course, as we bring this to an end.
Sorry, Chair, you asked if there were unanswered questions, and you did not.
Let's allow them to speak on the program.
Okay, Honourable Chair. Well, firstly, I would like to indeed thank the chairperson for inviting the committee to this joint meeting and from the robust engagement that took place here flowing from the three presentations, we have gained deeper and fresh insights on the department's overall budget shortfall. Now, in our consultation here, we have come to the conclusion that this matter on the BRR has already been covered in the discussions that took place here. As a result, I will then just go over what our recommendation as a committee was, and from there, we then take it from there. Well, just a few observations is that what was key flowing from the presentations was the fact that we have to shift our focus from universities only and to a focus on the post-school education and training sector as a whole. So I think that will assist in ensuring that indeed as we engage, we then take that into consideration, not only focus on the universities. But also, what was important to us was also the, you know, how we looking at addressing the 0% fee-free budget shortfall in the 2016 MTF period, or let me say 2016-14 period, but also beyond in terms of the MTF period. And also the other observations that we made is that indeed the 0.72% of the GDP that is apportioned to university subsidies is not sufficient, and I'm sure in further engagement that will be looked into. But then our recommendation then as a committee, and this recommendation is attached to our report, is that
if adequate funding for higher education and training can be apportioned, the department will be able to achieve on its vision and the mandate of the post-school education and training sector. And then we are also saying that, again, if adequate funding is apportioned, the department will be able to implement its AIDS program to the fullest. It will also be able to address the TVET colleges that are confronted by increase of access now that the TVET colleges have been migrated to the Department of Higher Education and Training with effect from April in the current financial year, but also the expansion of their infrastructure, because as we increase the access, that should be matched by also infrastructure that will be able to absorb the students in terms of accommodation and lecture halls. And then we're also saying that the department has an organizational structure, and from the presentations that were given here, there is a budget shortfall of 10% towards a vacant post. So if adequate funding can be apportioned, I think the department will be able to fill the vacant post so that they are also assisted to implement their strat plan as expected. And also all these programs that are attached to the department, including your universities, TVET colleges, and your community education and training colleges, but also NESPA. We then say this came from the fact that, remember, initially this allocation of infrastructure grant was allocated to the province, to the provinces. But then we then said if it can then now be allocated to the department so that the department can proceed with the activities attached to this infrastructure grant, which includes maintenance of the structures and develop their infrastructure to alleviate the acute shortage of student housing and colleges. Lastly, we are putting emphasis on partnership between private sector, business, and the department, which we are saying will be of utmost importance to augment the funding of the post-school education and training. But thank you very much for the invite once more. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Issues that reflect, obviously, you indicated that there are issues that will require further to relook on the issues and make specific decisions on. I'll invite the co-chair, Honorable Mashabile, to make the concluding remarks.
Chairperson, let me start by clarifying the process that the appropriation committee will make decisions once we are done with all the hearings. So we're not going to make any decisions today. We will consider all the inputs. So today it was really to particularly hear the department. And I just want to summarize quickly my understanding so that as we conclude later, probably in a week or 2 weeks' time, the Deputy Minister and the team indicated that in terms of the shortfall that is required, so short term, shortfall 2.33 billion, the funds will be made available in the budget of 2016-17. I think they said government will contribute 1.935 billion, the universities about 396.7 billion. So the shortfall for next year is covered. For this financial year, 2015, the CFO just indicated that they have money available to deal with whatever challenges might universities might have in January, the earlier months that we were concerned about. Now, there is a way in which department deals with such instances, and I think my understanding from the CFO is that they are reprioritizing some of the resources they have to deal with that problem. And in that case, you may not need to adjust, to amend the adjusted budget because they have the money. What we will do as the appropriation committee will receive all those figures, look at them, and indeed, if we are satisfied that those resources are available, we'll come to the conclusion that there's no need to amend the budget. So the issue of amending the budget, we are not throwing it away, but I don't think we should deal with it you know, in this manner. I think let's get all the information, and the appropriation committee will satisfy itself. Because I think the concern from all of us is that there must be money available. I don't think we just want to amend the budget for the sake of it. Of course, that's the right of Parliament. Parliament has the power to amend the budget. And if we come to the conclusion that moving those resources around requires an amendment, we will consider that. So I think let's manage it that way. There are still a number of other stakeholders that we are going to be engaging with in the coming week, and we will then sit to make the decisions. So we will ask the department to give us information that we need in writing, correct figures, because there's been a debate about how much is this money. We will get that information so that we satisfy ourselves. Then there's a long-term issue that we are going to have to deal with. And I think from all members, what I hear is that there is a need to increase funding to the post-school system as a whole, not just universities. Now, that's a long-term issue that beyond adopting the MCBPS on the 20th, we have to deal with that question. And I think from the input that we received, we will also benchmark that with our peers in the continent, the developing countries. I think already there's indication that we are 0.662. Our peers are about 0.7. So we will look into that issue because, as Mike was saying, obviously if we take an issue that South Africa must fund post-school education at the level of 0.7% of GDP, there will be implications to the budget, and we need to look at the issues Mike raised about how do we reprioritize. Other people are talking about taxes, etc. But there is no one who's saying that we should stay where we are. I think we are very clear. There's no going back. We have to increase funding to higher education. We must find the money. And the question that we are going to have to deal with in the next coming months is where do we find it? But I don't think there's anybody here who's saying, no, no, there's nothing we can do. Because if we say there's nothing we can do, then the crisis looms. So that's long term. But as I said, the appropriation committee is continuing to engage in the coming week with other stakeholders. But that's where we are moving. And we are going to look at all those options that Mike and others were raising, to say how do we ensure that we fund at the level that we'll be able to deal with the challenges that we face. I think we can close it on that note, Honourable Members, for today. I think we've done well so far. We are dealing with the issue. And that's the message that must go out there, that Parliament is dealing with this matter. And I'm happy that the Minister and the Deputy Minister honored us with their presence to come and deal with this matter themselves. We appreciate that, Deputy Minister, that you and the Minister came, because this is a very challenging issue. With those few words, can I thank all of you and adjourn the meeting, have lunch, and you can go to your other commitments. Thank you very much. I don't know if there's lunch, but there was lunch on the program.
Michael, how are you? I like this one. 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 I like this